Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Marking Out with Mike, a wrestling podcast, hopefully becoming one of your new favorite podcasts. And if it's not yet, hopefully it will be soon. I want to apologize for getting this episode out to you guys a little bit later. This is going to feature news and notes and as well as our recap of NXT. Normally, I try to get this episode out by Friday, but it's just been a little bit busier week. Things with work and distractions kind of keeping me going and distracting me. This is actually my third time trying to record this podcast because different things keep on disturbing me, but I try to fit it in when my schedule allows it. We will have the SmackDown episode up soon as well. And thankfully, as much as I love wrestling and as much as I love watching it every single day of the week, we don't have any pay-per-views or anything this weekend that I'm aware of. So this should allow me to finally get caught back up and then take a little bit of breather before Tuesday's episode, which will, of course, cover Monday Night Raw and whatever happens there, which will feature night two of the draft as well. So we saw TakeOver 31, and that'll kind of build towards what we're going to discuss here tonight. But before we get to that, I want to go through the news and notes. And I also want to talk about how grateful I am for you guys sharing this podcast, supporting this podcast, and listening to this podcast. We are now, as I've said, I believe in the AEW recap, over 500 streams. We've only got less than 10 podcasts on the channel right now. So it's great that people are going back and listening to older wrestling content that I was putting out before I started this podcast officially, and as well as listening to all the new stuff. We are on most major streaming platforms. So wherever you listen, obviously you already found us if you're listening now, but if you want to share it with friends, family, and other wrestling fans, Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts are just some of the places. You can find us on websites like Overcast, and we're working on trying to get featured on as many platforms. We want to be all across the web and easily accessible and available to anyone who has any interest in listening. We're starting to get to a point where we're averaging double-digit listens per episode, which doesn't probably sound like too much, but you figure there's a wide variety of episodes available about wrestling, a lot of podcasts, some of them by wrestlers themselves. So a lot of demand, a lot to keep up with, and a lot to compete with. So I'm always going to be tweaking this. I invite you guys to engage with me on social media. Twitter is my platform of choice. I'm on other things as well, but that's where I like to spend a lot of my time. My handle there, if you so choose to follow, is Mike S. Flanagan. And any feedback, any ideas, anything you want to critique or offer up as words of wisdom, I'm definitely super, super open and receptive to hearing all of it, as long as you can do it in a positive manner. No sense in being ugly about anything. So a little tweak I do want to make to hopefully make this a more enjoyable listening experience for everyone is I was dividing up. So I do an hour long podcast. There's a lot of other podcasts that are sometimes 2-3 hours. I don't want to make it too long. I don't want it to feel like a chore. If you have the opportunity to listen longer and you want to listen to other episodes, then that's great. But I want to make it about an hour. You can listen to it maybe on your lunch break or maybe when you work out, whatever your regimen is. Maybe you have a warehouse job or a job that allows you to listen to music and listen to podcasts and the radio and things like that. And if we can be a part of your life, if I can be a part of your life in that way, then that's super humbling. And I'm grateful to have you along in any capacity, to have me along in any capacity. But one thing I want to do is instead of divulging the first half hour to news and notes and then the second half hour to wrestling content, I've realized, and I probably should have realized this sooner, that it takes more time to cover these shows. These shows are all 2 hours. Raw is 3 hours long, and 30 minutes is not enough time to go through and really cover everything completely on each show. And I find myself feeling a little bit rushed at the end of these shows. And I don't want the action to be rushed like that. I want it to be smooth and enjoyable and feel natural. I don't want it to seem like I'm just phoning these things in, because this is truly a passion of mine. Really love pro wrestling, looking forward to COVID eventually ending and getting involved in more local pro wrestling myself, both as an interviewer, and I do have experience as a ring announcer. And so I want to get back in the ring in a non-physical sense and do some ring announcing with promotions that'll have me. And hopefully, you know, in a couple months, maybe next spring or something, I'll have more opportunities, more things to promote, and maybe places that people can come see me live and see some pro wrestling live in general. So I'm gonna start focusing the news and notes section, I think 15 minutes. That way that allows 45 minutes or so to divulge more about what's going on in the matches and discuss what's happening there and just offer more insight in general. So as I kind of ease into it, there is a bigger topic. I only have one topic for this week's news and notes. It's a little bit of a double dipper, and I thought we could take some time to really talk about it so that way we don't have to gloss over it. And if... hopefully, I'm just trying to be sensitive, so I guess we'll just drop right into it and talk about it, and you guys should understand my hesitation there. So the speaking out movement has been sweeping around. We've seen guys like Joey Ryan lose their career over it. We've seen Jack Gallagher in trouble, and now Matt Riddle is in trouble. And we have no reason to think that any of these women are telling anything other than the complete truth. Obviously, innocent until proven guilty, but we have to trust these women. This is why certain ladies are concerned about coming out, because they don't want to ruin their reputations over it. And it's sad. It's sad that people are afraid. If you are inappropriate or physically abusive in some capacity, a person should not be afraid to out you. So if what's being said about Matt Riddle is true, then fuck that guy. Hopefully he'll be out of WWE and hopefully he'll get his legal ramifications. But we don't know what's going on, so I'm just going to kind of share the information as I understand it. I am not a journalist. I am just a wrestling fan with a podcast that shares his opinions on things. So pardon me if I do say anything and the information is incorrectly, but I'm going to proceed with as much care and respect and carefulness as I can. So prior to his time in WWE, Matt Riddle, like a lot of up-and-coming wrestlers, spent some time in Evolve. And while he was wrestling in Evolve, he was accused of sexual misconduct by one of the female superstars in that organization, and she has filed a lawsuit. So this lawsuit is now a lawsuit that includes Matt Riddle, Gabe from Evolve, he's the booker and the promoter of the organization, and then also WWE. WWE is involved in this lawsuit as well, and that's obviously not something that they want to be involved with. They have a image that they want to present, a PG image, and sexually inappropriate behavior is obviously not in there. As I understand it, if I recall correctly, I believe that he solicited a woman, the woman in question, the female performer, for oral sex as they were driving to one of their shows. There were other wrestlers in the car. I think he might have been driving. I don't know that he would be brazen enough to ask a question like that if a driver was awake and present. But I don't know specifically what exactly the allegations are without looking, but as I recall, when they were originally came out this past spring, that's what it was. So, as I said, we don't know if Riddle has done this or not, but we have no reason to believe that someone would lie about such things. But where Riddle is really shooting himself in the foot is by his recent comments involving Seth. So Seth Rollins is now supposedly upset with him. And I do have some concise information. This is from wrestlingnews.co. And so apparently he made some comments about Becky Lynch, and it's believed that that's got him in hot water. So I'm going to kind of read the information as I have it. So earlier on Friday, Seth Rollins was on the WWE draft watch-along party, and he indicated that there may have been real-life heat with he and Matt Riddle. He said, I've got no interest in facing Matt Riddle at any point in my career, so he can go to Raw as far as I'm concerned. The comments from Rollins don't appear to be part of a storyline, and there appears to be a legit heat between them. It's not clear how all of this started, but it may be from a post made by Riddle's wife, Lisa, back in November. The now-deleted post includes a photo of Becky Lynch, and it said the following. Calling out multiple main roster divas over the past couple of weeks for being straight, skinny, jiggling fat. Not saying they aren't beautiful, just saying squat. It's funny because there have been multiple female wrestlers that have asked to train with me. Again, this is his wife speaking. Each one of them look great in their gear. Clearly they know what they're doing, especially if they want to train with yours truly. I'm not familiar with his wife, so I don't know why she's so cocky, but she must have an athletic background. All females freaking squat and go hard. I do have many photos of my rear end in minimal clothing besides these two. Here it is, a comparison of me not caring what I look like, just trying to be strong, decent Olympic lifter and a mom of three versus two females getting paid a ton of money for how they look, rant over. And so then you can see the post, and it's a photo of Becky Lynch. And I mean, we all know what Becky Lynch looked like before she left to go and take on motherhood. And Becky Lynch was and is beautiful. There's no cellulite or anything to pick on in the photo. Not like that would make it okay. But it just kind of makes you think that Riddle kind of attracts a toxic behavior. And maybe this is why he married somebody like this. I know most women, if their husband was being accused of these types of actions that he's being accused of, probably wouldn't stand by him, and it would at least come out and say that they're working against him or things like that. So they'd go on in the story, and a fan on Twitter had shared a story about a dinner at a steakhouse last year. It was after Survivor Series, and there appeared to be tension between both parties at that time. So the fan tweeted, after last year's Survivor Series, Riddle took me and our crew out to eat at the same steakhouse Seth, Becky, and Carl Anderson were dining at. They knew we were there, but went out of their way to acknowledge us. Throughout the entire weekend, Riddle talked a ton of shit about Rollins and how he never evolved as a performer, how he didn't take care of his opponents in the ring, how he was stale, etc. This just wasn't one conversation. It was every time I saw Riddle that weekend. So we could, you know, keep going on, but of course there is a lot of stories in the past with Matt Riddle and his comments about Brock Lesnar and Goldberg. The guy is just obviously, hopefully not a sexual abuser, but obviously a cocky son of a gun, thinking he can take on these big athletes and whip everybody's ass. And I get it that he's a legitimate tough guy, that he has a background in MMA, but it's just like, you're not going to make any friends, especially wrestling can be a long business if you're successful. So the idea that whether or not how you feel about Seth Rollins as a performer, he has been a good draw for WWE. He's a four-time world champion, two runs with the WWE title and two runs with the Universal, plus countless big-name programs that he's involved in, his stuff he's doing with the Mysterio family right now, his runs with the tag team titles, of course, his time in the Shield. So the guy's always found himself a way to stay relevant and stay at the top. And fans can say whatever they want. Matt Riddle can say what he wants. But at the end of the day, cash is king. And Rollins is making a lot of money, not only for himself and his family, but for WWE. And there's a reason they keep the guys at the top that they keep. You guys can think it's about favoritism, and that might factor in a little bit, but it is about more than that. You know, these guys are kicking ass and drawing money, and WWE money talks and bullshit walks. So that's why you see guys who are maybe great athletes, but they're one-dimensional. And that's why you see these guys that don't last in the company. And Riddle, even though he's got the look, he seems to be rubbing fans the wrong way. And now he's getting WWE involved in these lawsuits. I can't imagine that they're going to be happy to be involved in any nonsense like that. But hopefully justice will be served, and hopefully everything will work out the way that it's supposed to. Because that's just crazy to think about, especially, you know, as these women attempt to come up in pro wrestling. You do have to go through these indies and participate and make a name for yourself. So these girls shouldn't feel uncomfortable, like they're in danger of getting preyed on and things like that. So that's essentially what we've got on that. And that's money. That's just over the 15-minute mark, according to my clock here. So that's going to give us time now to just really get into what we need to talk about, which is the action on the show, NXT Wednesday night, the first NXT weekly television event from the Capitol Wrestling Center. Of course, TakeOver 31 is where they debuted the Capitol Wrestling Center, but this was the first actual TV show that they were able to have there. So the show does open up, and there's a video recap covering some of the highlights from TakeOver 31, and that just kind of dives us into that week's episode. So to start the show, Ciampa comes out to the ring for a match. He is going to be facing Kushida. We come to find out, the commentary clued us in, that this match was made because Ciampa and Kushida had gotten into a brawl before the show began. I missed that. They didn't show that on the television product, so I don't know if that was something that was advanced on social media or if I just somehow missed it, but I didn't see it. I recorded the episode. I don't think there would be any reason that something like that would be edited out of the show, but that was the reasoning that we were given for this match starting. So it was a good match. Obviously, those are two of the top guys in NXT, so it had a very pay-per-view type of feel. And one thing I was wondering is maybe if a big match to open the show like that was done as a way to try to counter-program what AEW was doing, which was Jericho's 30th anniversary show over on TNT. I don't know if that's true, especially because I don't think this match was promoted ahead of time, so it's not really successful counter-programming if people don't even know like where they can watch it and engage. So that's kind of what's going on there. But it was a good match. Kushida was targeting the arm throughout the match, similar to what we saw him do against Velveteen Dream at the pay-per-view. It was worth noting that Vic Joseph and Wade Barrett were actually truthfully at ringside calling the matches. There was a big hoopla and some fuss on Twitter over the weekend when TakeOver aired because Vic Joseph was there calling the matches, but then there were two very awkward body doubles there that didn't make sense, that I guess were supposed to be in place of Beth Phoenix and Wade Barrett, of course. But this week, Wade Barrett was actually there. Beth Phoenix, as you may know, does record her commentary live from home because she's a mother. And then, of course, as you may already know, she is married to Edge. And I'm not going to pretend to understand the personal details of their life, but Edge, as we know, is recovering from his injury that he suffered at WrestleMania. So I imagine she stays home to stay safe, not only for her children and her family because of COVID, but also likely to help Edge do mama and papa stuff. At one point during the match, Ciampa had Kushida up. They were on the top rope, and he kept kind of staring over at the announce table, and the announcers even drew attention to it. I believe it was being implied that he would possibly superplex Kushida through the table, which didn't happen. I guess that'd be sick, but it's too far. I can't see any reason, even if it was done safely. I don't see a way in which they could even just superplex back that far, but it was a good little tease to give it a big match feel. But it does not happen. The action continued. They brought up the fact that Kushida is a legitimate tough guy. He's a legit submission specialist. They talk about how he is 8-0 undefeated in legitimate mixed martial arts fights. So throughout the encounter, he is applying various submission moves. Ciampa is able to battle out of those. And then there's just repeated arm attacks by Kushida. Repeated. So it makes it hard for Ciampa to do his finisher, where of course he has to hook his opponent's arms and helps him lift the opponents up and slam them down. So he was not able to get his finisher locked in. But Kushida was able to lock in the hoverboard lock. It was right in the center of the ring. I was very curious because they do book Ciampa so strongly. I was curious to see kind of what was going to come of that, how he was going to get out of it. And so it ended after Velveteen Dream would run in and attack Kushida. That resulted in a disqualification. And then Kushida and Dream would end up battling outside. Kushida would end up sending Velveteen Dream packing, running to the back. So they're still booking Dream to look kind of weak after his supposed trouble. They did declare Ciampa the winner as a result of DQ, but he was visibly not pleased to win the match that way. He's not like a cheater kind of guy. And so they talked about what would possibly happen to Dream when Ciampa got his hands on him. So possibly that's going to be the next feud. The next feud is Ciampa versus Dream. So we'll see next week if it continues down that path or if it's a television match, if they continue to seem like they're going to bury Velveteen Dream or not. So next, Ember Moon, rather, was out live. She came to the ring to cut a promo. She did thank the fans for welcoming her back. She was away for 14 long months, and she said that she rode her motorcycle. She rode, and she said she rode and rode and rode, and she said that she found clarity. She says from here on out, she's going to operate under Ember's Law. She says it sounds corny, but from here on out, no one's going to walk over her anymore, and no one is certainly going to tell her what to do. And she says now that she's back, she wants some gold. So before things could continue, the NXT Women's Champion, Io Shirai, she had some thoughts on that matter. She did come out and interrupt Moon before she could continue any further. She gets into the ring herself, Io Shirai does, and she calls for a microphone. But before she's even able to get a lick out, she can't even say one word. Rhea Ripley comes out and she says that she loves Ember's new attitude. But the interruptions continue, and before Ripley is able to continue with any admiration or any further comments, Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez actually come out and they jump her. Ember Moon does run up the ramp and comes to Ripley's aid, and Io does sit there. And she just kind of watches on as the four women kind of brawl the two teams amongst each other. William Regal would come out. He would make that a tag team match for later in the show. That would turn out to be our main event for the night. So after that, we do cut to a funny shot of Drake Maverick. He is arriving at the arena with his bag. We're told that that was earlier in the day. And he's stopped and he says that he and Killian Dane have been preparing strategy. They've been talking over things that tag teams talk about, strategy and moves. And he says they've even been talking about their music. Killian Dane then shows up and he seems super confused. And he reminds Drake Maverick that the two of them are not friends and they are certainly not a tag team. Drake then goes on to tell him that they will actually be in a tag team match later on that evening. Dane seems frustrated by that, and he kind of storms off, and that's that. They didn't show an ad for Halloween Havoc. It's the same one that they showed at TakeOver 31. Good commercial there starring Shotzi Blackheart. We go backstage, and Io Shirai is there, and she is asked why she didn't help Rhea Ripley when she was being attacked by Gonzalez and Dakota Kai earlier. She says, it's not my problem. She goes on to say that she only has one problem, and her problem is the NXT Women's Championship. So she's just focused on the belt, staying the champion, staying relevant, and just reminds us that those aren't her issues. Adam Cole then would speak next. He breaks his silence. It's the first time we've heard from him since he was attacked by Ridge Holland at TakeOver 31. Of course, he was left in a heap of himself, and we were told that his ribs were broken as a result of the attack. He says he has no idea why Ridge attacked him and broke his ribs, and he says, quite frankly, he does not care, and he declares Holland a dead man. So obviously, they are setting up for something big between those two. Seems like they're giving Ridge Holland a push. But Adam Cole's words would prove to be daunting, and we would find out later in the show. They would have unintended, ironic resonation. So After that, Everrise, which is a brand new tag team to me. I don't know much about them. The announced team did a good job of kind of explaining that they lose a lot of matches and that they have a lot of conspiracy theories and reasoning behind why they think they lose their matches. So they're taking on Drake Maverick and his new partner, Killian Dane. They enter to some really silly, poppy music. Killian Dane hates it. He kind of does the no thing with his hands and tells them, you know, cut the music. I don't want to listen to this junk. And Wade Barrett would then go on and kind of vocalize that he also thinks it's silly and that Killian Dane is better than this. And Vic Joseph would kind of be the voice of reason for Drake Maverick and talk about how it was fine and it was fun and it was silly and it was great. So Killian Dane would decide to start the match himself. He tells his partner, or his supposed partner and supposed friend, Drake Maverick, to get out of the ring. And the match does not officially start, but Drake seems like he wants to start. So Killian Dane gives him a super hard tag, which again was not necessary. The match hadn't started, and Maverick could have just got in to start the match. So the match starts, the activity ensues. Later on in the encounter, Killian Dane was tagged in to the match, but he didn't enter. So even though Drake Maverick was not the legal man, he was getting pinned and the referee hit a one count, and then he would kick out. And it was weird because I guess the referee didn't see the tag and that's why it went that way. And it wasn't supposed to be like, oh, the referee was distracted by the heel tag team. I think he just legitimately didn't see him. So he gets in the ring and he drags Drake Maverick over to his corner and then he legitimately tags him and he gets into the ring. Drake doesn't want to be tagged out, so the two of them argue, and I thought that's where the match was going to get ending because Drake Maverick would get rolled up and there would be a two count there. But the match, he would kick out and, well, he didn't kick out, but Killian Dane saved him and the activity would ensue. Killian Dane ends up getting frustrated. He levels one of the members of Everrise, and then he took Drake Maverick and actually powerbombed him on top of the opponent. He was all incapacitated from the powerbomb, so he just laid in a heap on top of the opponent, and we saw a 1-2-3. So the new little opposites attract tag team does start 1-0, and they are picking up their first victory as a team here. Drake Maverick was super stoked and fired up that he won because he wants this guy to be his buddy and everything. And he encourages Killian Dane to dance and do some silly moves and enjoy the victory. Killian Dane says, instead of dancing, I'm just going to hit you. So he clocks him right in the face with the right hand and he falls to the mat. Killian then goes out. He seems to be kind of remorseful for his actions. He feels bad. So he turns around and he ends up grabbing Drake, throwing him over his shoulders, and a woozy Drake is kind of doing a thumbs up as he's carrying him backstage. So they're going to do kind of an odd couple type of dealio with that. We then see a recap. They show us Toni Storm's return, and they remind us of all her past accolades, everything she's done in both the NXT UK, winning the Women's Championship over there, success she's had in the Mae Young Classic, as well as other things as well. So they paint a picture and they remind us that she's a tough SOB not to be forgotten. We then cut to a backstage segment. We're not even backstage, actually. It's the Garganos, and they're out walking their dog. So it was really funny because you couldn't see the dog. You just saw the leash, and I was like, oh, there's no dog there. They're just implying. And they get into their garage, and you hear a dog just panting audibly, very, very loud. And I'm like, what is this? Is this like some corny? If I can remind you, I'm a mark for the Garganos. I love them. But I'm like thinking WWE is editing in a fake dog sound. But later there was a dog there, and apparently this thing's just having a crazy asthma attack on there. But the Garganos get back to their house. Their garage is open for some reason, and there is a television in there. And they're looking at it, and Johnny Gargano's like, oh, it's from Indy Cartwright. And apparently it's a gift. And so Johnny ends up taking the new television that the NXT superstar had bought him as a present. He takes that bad boy into the house. So then we cut back. They go to a commercial. We return, and Austin Theory is in action, and he is taking on Leon Ruff.
almost immediately, Leon Ruff is able to hit him with a big standing Hurricane Rana, and he almost gets a three count out of it for the upset victory. Wade Barrett would then go on to compare Austin Theory to that of a young Randy Orton. All the promise in the world, he says, but has an attitude problem that he needs to work on. So the match would effectively be a squash, and Theory would hit the ATL, which is essentially his version where he kind of puts the guy up for an F5 almost, and then kind of turns it into a cutter. It's a really cool move. You might have seen it in the past when he was on Raw. It was just a little bit of a squash, so he grabs the microphone after the match, and he continues to gloat. Says the only reason he lost on last Wednesday's edition to Adam Cole was because he was cold, and he had not yet warmed up for the match. So he says he's ready. He says he's the future of NXT, and he'll take on anyone at any time now that he's warmed up. So Dexter Lumis would then come out. So Dexter Lumis has been gone for 10 weeks, roughly 3 months. He was dealing with an ankle injury. So he came with a blank stare, didn't say anything, did his little creepy psychopath thing where he crawls into the ring. And so that would actually immediately result in a second match. So we had Austin Theory taking on Dexter Lumis. And Lumis would open things up. At one point, he hits Austin with an incredibly devastating-looking, crazy violent uppercut. It looked really impressive. That's why I used all those adjectives right there. And then at one point, Aries was able to kind of battle back. He started mocking Dexter, and he did this little dog crawl thing that he does around the ring. And then he continued to take the fight back to him. And Theory had a good showing. They definitely let him look strong against the returning Dexter Lumis. They even speculated that Lumis was off his game because he was suffering from ring rust after being out of action for the past 10 weeks, as we discussed. So Aries wasn't staying up on him as he had the advantage. He would kind of gloat and be cocky. So this allowed Dexter an opportunity at different occasions to battle back into the match. And I even put in my notes here, I think Austin is going to be a good talent, and I could see him possibly even being NXT champion. We've seen them let smaller guys be the NXT champion. Most of them, even guys I love like Johnny Gargano and Finn Balor, are not as big as some of their wrestling counterparts, but they've been able to give runs with the NXT championship. But even though I see high things for him, even regardless of his cockiness, because that's all just a gimmick, I just don't know if he would find a place on the main roster. We see that a lot. Guys do really well in NXT, and then they come up. But we did see a little bit of Theory on Raw around WrestleMania when he teamed up with Andrade, and they were doing that whole thing. So who knows? Who knows where that would go? He got a WrestleMania match out of it. So he would end up, Austin Theory, that is, falling short in the match. He was in a Dexter Lumis submission hold, and he didn't submit. He just flat out passed out, and so they did declare Dexter Lumis the victor. Before Lumis was able to get up and exit the ring, though, Cameron Grimes, who I'm personally not a fan of, came out, and he attacked him. Afterwards, he attacked Dexter Lumis, that is, and he calls him a freak, and then he leaves. And Grimes, you know, he's got a decent look. His look is not great. He's not in bad shape. He's not the heaviest set wrestler on the roster, but he is certainly not the most in shape. He's got the whole hairy man thing, but I just don't understand his gimmick. It's hard for me to buy into these wrestlers that just have weird gimmicks. He wears like a cowboy hat, and I guess he's a country boy. He's like Kid Rock. His gimmick is that he's Kid Rock, and it's just kind of weird or whatever. So he goes out and he does that. So then we go backstage. Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez are being interviewed. During the segment, they do talk about how they're going to dominate the team of Rhea Ripley and Ember Moon later on that night. Dakota Kai even says that Ember Moon better get in line behind her as it pertains to the NXT Women's Championship. So essentially saying, Ember, you're not going to take my spot. Know your role and step back. Before going back to the ring, like I thought we were going to do, we cut to Grimes again, like just that fast. We had seen him attack Lumis in the ring, and then It went to a commercial, came back, did the thing with Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. But then we saw Grimes again, which was weird. And he literally didn't do anything. And he was standing backstage. And he called Loomis a freak again. Literally, that's all he did. And then he left. And the whole time, I'm like, oh, well, why would they make him say the same thing? Somebody's going to run. Because he was by one of those metal garage doors. And I was like, oh, Loomis is definitely going to come and whip his ass, you know, and throw him into the garage or something like we see. But no, he just like is like, oh, yeah, just in case you forgot in the last 45 seconds, the guy's a freak. And then he leaves. So, I don't know. That was just a little bit of weird, almost like they had TV time that they needed to fill in. So we still don't cut back to the in-ring action, and instead we get an extended look of the TakeOver 31 main event. So we did know that Finn Balor would suffer two fractures in his jaw during that match, and they said he would miss some time, but they didn't say how much time he was going to miss. They said it'll be hard for him to talk at first, just while he recovers, he's only gonna be able to talk a small amount. But they didn't mention stripping him of the championship or anything like that. So I think they're hoping, possibly, this is just speculation on my part, that maybe they can keep the title on him for a bit longer and allow things to, you know, continue there. So there's another cut to earlier in the day where Ridge Holland is showing up in a Mercedes, and he's going to be in an action next versus Danny Burch. So before that match goes, we see Damian Priest with his North American Championship. He briefly talks about his victory over Johnny Gargano, and he says, who's going to be the next man up for this title? He says, whoever wants to step to me and try to take this championship off of me is going to get a reckoning for their efforts. So Rich Holland is on his way down the ramp, entering the ring, and he would go to take on Danny Burch in that match. So the two Englishmen were fighting. It was a pretty good match. A lot of chain wrestling to start things off. And it was a really good kind of close contest. They were going shot for shot. Both guys were looking strong. Ridge Holland would eventually pick up the win. But before he would leave the ring, he would kind of scoff his boot and essentially pretend to kick up dirt at his opponent. Danny Burch didn't like that. He gets up immediately and he smacks Holland across the face. He just open hand slaps him across the face. The two of them continue to fight. And then Oney Lorcan comes out and makes the save, saves his partner, and sends Ridge Holland out to the outside of the ring. So it was short-lived. Holland actually gets back into the ring and they're throwing punches. He's hitting Lorcan. Refs come out. They try to break it up. At this point, Ridge Holland is outside and Oney Lorcan dives over the top rope and he levels Holland with a dive and he gets back to his feet. Pretty much as soon as he gets dived on, Ridge Holland is right back to his feet immediately and they're still banging it out. They're still fighting each other. So they go back into the ring. Oney Lorcan gets leveled. He takes a huge clothesline. So they're really, as I said earlier, trying to build something up for Ridge Holland and leveling him with the clothesline. And then at this point, he goes to leave. Lorcan gets up a second time and goes over and does like another suicide dive over the top rope and takes Oney Lorcan out. And it was all bad from there. So the referees do break it up immediately. They throw up the universal symbol for X, which if you've been watching wrestling for a while, you might know is a legitimate injury, kind of calling an audible. So Lorcan would kind of sell it off and would dive into the ring or get back into the ring and check on Danny Burch. And that gave the cameras something to focus on. But they would show a replay and you would see, don't watch it if you're easily kind of gored out, if things like that bother you, because you see Ridge Holland's ankle just absolutely give way. It is not kayfabe. It is not a story. It is completely real. And his ankle just breaks on live television and is absolutely devastating. So we would go find out that he was legitimately injured. They would cut back from the action and he was being loaded up onto a stretcher, giving the thumbs up like, hey, I'm gonna survive this, as he's being carted out. And we would find out, not on the show, but I went and looked it up. So last Thursday he had his recovery, his surgery, I should say, and he's at home recovering. But he dislocated and completely broke his left ankle, which I didn't know you could do both at the same time. He ruptured his patellar tendon, and he suffered a dislocated patellar, which I believe is in your knee. And so I'm not a doctor, but that's super devastating, and that is not going to be a fun way to spend some time. It's heartbreaking because he has a look. He's a former legitimate English rugby player, so he's as buff as they come, and it just sucks to see his push kind of come up short like that, because obviously he's going to be out of action because he's essentially recovering from three different injuries. But hopefully, because he's young and you know, it's his first major injury that I'm aware of, he'll battle back. Wade Barrett, not to sound cold, but he does speak about it. He's like, you know, it's part of the business. The tough ones battle back. So I think he seems like a tough dude. I didn't really know much about him. I had done a bunch of homework. I was prepared to talk about him on the podcast and talk about his background. And we did a little bit after his appearance at TakeOver 31. But that's where things are with that right there. So just a complete bummer for him, for his family, and for his fans. So the show does resume, and we see Johnny Gargano. He's at home still. He's got the new television. It's all set up, and he's watching a clip from the Women's Battle Royal that aired a few weeks back. He calls Candace into the room a few times. She eventually shows up, and he says, hey, Candace, the television, it came with a USB, and did you notice that Indy Cartwright saved you multiple times throughout that Women's Battle Royal? Like, saved her from being eliminated. And Candace says, no, you know, I actually didn't notice that at first. She says, not particularly. And so Johnny Gargano kind of puts Indy Cartwright over, and he says, oh, I see great things for her. Bright future, bright future. And Candace then kind of nods her head along, and she's like, yeah, I think I'm starting to like her. So we will see where that goes. It seems like Indy Cartwright is maybe subscribing to the Gargano way of life, which we know is not always on the up and up. So there might be a little program with those three. Hopefully no more programs with the wheezing dog, though, because that was a little crazy. Hopefully that dog's doing all right. I'm mostly being funny. It wasn't really that crazy. I just super thought it was fake, and then it wasn't. So we then see Sacramento's own Timothy Thatcher. He's in a ring, not the NXT ring, but he's continuing his segment where he's giving life lessons and ring training to unnamed like talent. And so the gentleman he's talking to, he's kind of giving him life lessons. It's just a trainee. And then he's putting him in various submissions while the young man is tapping out. And he says that a man is not defined by his losses, but rather by the pain that he inflicts. He says he will not let life grind him down. So I'm a mark. That guy came out of Sacramento. That's where I'm from. That's where I'm recording this podcast right now. I want good things. I want to see that guy get some championships, do some things. He's a legitimate, real-life, tough guy. So he's brand new. Just joined in the spring. So we'll see what he can continue to do and make Sacramento proud and Northern California. And give me somebody new that I can continue to mark out over. So we, after that bit, they showed the thing. I kind of got ahead of my notes there with Ridge Holland being stretchered out and Wade Barrett making his comments and whatnot. So then Shotzi Blackheart would come out. She came out and she had her little Power Wheels tank that she drives, and it was decked out for Halloween Havoc. And we are told that she is, in fact, the host of Halloween Havoc. So she's going to do some MC duties. So I imagine they're going to continue to put her over. She has the personality, the creepy crawly, the green hair, things like that. So she seems like a great fit for a role like that, of course. So she is in a match, and it's against Xia Li. So immediately to open things up, she would hit Shotzi, or excuse me, Shotzi would hit Xia Li with a quick drop kick. And then there was some action, nothing really to talk about. It was just a quick storytelling match, I think, just to kind of hype up Shotzi as the host of the Halloween Havoc event, get people interested in her in that capacity for that role. So she would win the match. She went up top to the top rope and did one of her little sentons that she does where she lands back first. So Bo would have come out to the ring in a suit, and he would hand Xia Li an envelope. She opened it. She looked at it. We don't know what it said. The announcers didn't speculate, but it seemed urgent because she didn't ask any questions. She would then go on to immediately exit the ringside area with them. So the last segment, it was our main event. And look how good we're doing on time, guys. I'm really proud of myself, keeping it shorter on the news and notes and allowing ourselves more time to talk about the main event. So I got to say, just me marking out like I do, I really, really like Rhea Ripley. I'm a big fan of her look and her music and all that stuff and what she's doing. So the match was airing. They did an in-match ad break like they do sometimes. Their sponsor was Burger King, and so Vic Joseph read the Burger King ad for Whopper, where he talks about how Whoppers don't have any artificial flavoring or colors now. And for the second show in a row, he did this at TakeOver when he ran it, and then he did it again. He really is a fan of this joke, and so he says, and there's nothing artificial about tonight's action, or nothing artificial about everything in the ring tonight. He's really proud of himself. I don't know if he's doing that on purpose, but he loves that line. So Raquel Gonzalez was actually really able to hang tough with Rhea Ripley. They made her look strong. Ripley, of course, has more experience right now in terms of what we've seen on WWE television. And they went on to show like she was going to hang with her tit for tat, not get manhandled. So that was really cool. But I seem to notice that Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez, they have a good chemistry together, and I feel like the two of them could be legitimate challengers and seem like a legitimate threat for the Women's Tag Team Championships. We're told that those can be defended on Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. When Bayley and Sasha Banks were the champions, they did show up on NXT, so that could be a thing. I know eventually NXT and WWE and the powers that be are going to probably break those girls up because they love saying, hey, this tag team works and makes sense. We should break them up. So hopefully that's a long ways off. Don't even necessarily care if they win the titles. It just seems like a program that would make sense for them. And I think it could be a legitimate way to kind of build Raquel Gonzalez up and get fans used to her. I think eventually it's only a matter of time. She's going to be NXT Women's Champion. She seems to have all the skills. And that could be just like a good first title for her to kind of get her feet wet, as they say. So the match would end. Ember Moon would hit a perfect looking eclipse from the top rope, and that would secure the victory, and then the show would end. Her and Rhea Ripley would shake each other's hands. There was no dissension or anything teased between the two of them. It was just very professional, and they shook hands and they raised hands. I don't expect those two to I don't expect them to be a tag team, but I think short term what we will see from that is that they have a mutual respect for each other, and then maybe eventually there will be a scenario where they have to go. But the women's division in NXT is looking really strong. That is a place where NXT, if you want to talk about the head-to-head competition with AEW, AEW does have them in some places. I would say, in my opinion, AEW has one of the top two tag divisions in all of pro wrestling. But I would say that NXT, not necessarily WWE as a whole, but NXT has a very strong women's division. Toni Storm is back. Ember Moon is back. There doesn't seem to be any ring rust there. Io Shirai is always looking good. They have Candice LeRae if they want to throw her in the mix. She has whatever her program is that she's going to be building with her husband and Indy Cartwright, where they can do that thing. And I'm just, you know, scratching the surface. We've got Dakota Kai who's saying, you know, Ember, get in line. So those two will be able to kind of battle. Rhea Ripley is there for a reason. And Triple H has said many, many times on interviews openly, and I don't believe it's a character-driven thing, that he does see Rhea Ripley kind of as the future of the women's division, and she's just a big, strong girl. She's tall, and she's got that right look that WWE always seems to chase. She's legitimately pretty, but she is also very tough. She's not like one of these old diva division women who was a bikini model and they kind of taught her how to wrestle and she's passable. She's a legitimate tough woman, and
she resonates with people. I don't even like metal, and I like her music. I like her look. I like everything about her. And I just, I really like what they're doing with the NXT women's division. There's a lot of opportunity there. Be curious to see what they do. It might be interesting if Candice LeRae and Indy Cartwright end up becoming friends for a little while and kind of form a tag team. That could be another tag team that could compete possibly for the women's championships, the women's tag team championships, because there are not a lot of legitimate organic teams in terms of the Divas division in tag team. And so that could be a little savior. You know, we've got the Riot Squad, but how many times can they legitimately challenge for the tag titles? And right now, Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax, that's a placeholder. Eventually, I think those two will square off against each other. Something's going to happen. I could be wrong because I'm not like 100% sure that that's what's going to happen. But they seem like they're destined to clash. But then again, on Raw, they did tease like, oh, we both like to hurt people. Maybe there's more in common with us than we realize. So be curious to see where exactly things stand with that and how it'll play out long term. Because somebody's eventually going to have to take those tag titles off of them. And since they broke up the Iconics, which was really only one of two other legit teams, they are building up the team of Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, which actually fits. They may not be the two most polished women, but Dana's tough and Dana's buff. She has got the look, and I think if they wanted to push her, in my Fig Fed, I have a very similar program going on with her, which is kind of funny. So I'm a mark for the state of Ohio. I like the Cleveland Indians and the Ohio State Buckeyes. And as you may or may not know, Alexa Bliss is from Columbus, and then Dana Brooke is from Cleveland, if I remember correctly. So they call Ohio the Buckeye State, so I always call them the Buckeye Blondes. And they're actually my women's tag champs. So it was interesting to see a similar dynamic get brought up because of the fact that they're both blonde and things like that. Mandy Rose, of course, though, is not from the state of Ohio. She is from elsewhere. I don't know where she's from without looking it up, but definitely know that it's not Ohio. But hopefully that team will continue to grow because Dana deserves a push. I mean, there's certain girls that they seem like they don't know what to do with, like Natty. They have her teamed up with Lana. I feel so bad for Natalya. Her family as a whole has given so much to the pro wrestling business, and they haven't really ever given her a lot of runs. She's kind of used as, I don't want to say enhancement talent, but she definitely puts a lot of teams over. I know she has had women's championships, but a girl like that with that pedigree, her father and her uncle and everybody being who they are, deserves a push. But I think she just doesn't really connect with fans, unfortunately. I like her. I like her lineage. I like her pedigree and her background. But she's not someone that when she hits the screen, I'm like, oh, Natalya's coming out. And I can't tell you why. She's not a bad worker. She's just not somebody that that speaks to me. And it sucks because when you can't identify a problem, you can't fix the problem. And I don't know how much they look into chitter chatter on social media and who the fans are booing and cheering, but I imagine it plays in a factor a bit. And I'm sure at some point they may have discussed it. But wrestling's crazy. You look at a Finn Balor doing his Demon King thing. That was once the most over gimmick in all of NXT and possibly all of wrestling at that point. And now it's just, you don't see it anymore. I really still like it and like the thing when he would, his music would play and it would go, ah, and all the fans would lift their hands up. But I think that's passed for most people. I think most fans are just kind of over that and they're on to something new. So especially when there's so many flavors everywhere, you can watch Impact and AEW, Ring of Honor, got the Pure tournament going on over there. Major League Wrestling's coming back soon. There's a lot of things. I mean, you look at these podcasts, I'm not even able to get content out. Like, I am stretched thin. Like, I have more content than I can cover most of the time. The SmackDown episode is going to come out on Sunday, which is going to be a day later than usual. But it's a good problem to have. This is the greatest time. Like, I'm essentially, the great thing about Anchor is Anchor gives me sponsors. You hear the sponsor at the top of every show. And you know, this is just something I do for a hobby, but to be able to sit here and work with sponsors and make a little bit of side money, talking about pro wrestling, talking about things I'm passionate about, hopefully connecting with fans, giving people a different take, a perspective that they had not thought of. It's just absolutely amazing. And I will tell you guys, after I wrap this podcast up and get it all dusted off and put a cute little bow on it and upload it to the internet for you, I am going to head out and buy some wrestling action figures. I have no shame in admitting that I am a grown-ass man who is part of the segment of the population that collects wrestling action figures and has a fig fed. You can call me a regular old Matt Cardona. I'm Mr. Zack Ryder out here. But I found a kid in my vicinity that had an old school looking Mankind figure. And somehow my fig fed does not have a Mankind. I have a Mick Foley from his commissioner days, but I never had Mankind. And I eventually want to add some more Foley into my fig fed. Probably a Cactus Jack I'd like to get at some point. Dude Love I was never really into, so that can stay by the wayside. And then he has a AJ Lee action figure that I'm just going to get because I don't think I have an AJ Lee. It's not an exceptionally amazing figure by any means, but I like to get representation where I can and grow my little fig fed. So one of these days, I'm probably going to do a podcast that is accompanied by video. I'm not exactly amazing at editing, so that's why I don't have a YouTube channel. But at some point, I do want to kind of mark out over my wrestling collection and show you guys what I have. And I got a lot of figure collectors that I engage with on social media that I believe support me here on my podcast. So I think that's an episode that could do really well and that people could enjoy. But once I have more info, once I have some free time, because my collection's split up. Part of it's here in California, which is where I currently live, and part of it is collecting dust, unfortunately, in a storage locker in the good state of Tennessee. So eventually I need to fly out there and figure out how in the hell I'm going to get that stuff. It's going to be way more expensive than it's worth, but I've been collecting that stuff since I was about like 14, since the late 90s, so it has a soft spot in my heart. But I'm always amazed when we get to the end of these episodes, guys, because I always feel like I could continue talking and continue going. But that's going to be all she wrote. I hope you guys listen. I hope you're having a super wonderful weekend and being safe. And I want to thank you again for listening. The idea that people are listening to me hot air about wrestling for 60 minutes is awesome. As I say in every episode, I am going to continue to work on some quality content and get some interviews for you guys and really bring some amazing stuff. It's an exciting time to be alive as a wrestling fan. So thank you again for listening. Thank you for supporting. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and spit your hot takes at me. I love to talk wrestling with wrestling fans. We can talk about the AEW figure line and other action figures as well, whatever you guys got. I try to keep it cool and positive. If you like zombies, you'll probably dig my vibes as well. But thank you again for listening. Until next time, I'm tapping out.